Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number two begins right now. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is hit me up on that text line. Dick Brubaker in about 30 minutes. Please stay tuned for that. Will Hampson in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll talk South Carolina. Just a couple of texts to get to here. Mike writes, a simple reason why Meemaw hasn't gone off to pasture. She has no children, grandkids, and no husband. So doesn't have a family to go spend her last years with, and all she has is the governor's mansion. She's got some friends. But it's coming at the expense of the state. Look, this prison situation is going to cost the state of Alabama a lot of money. This West Alabama corridor, you guys who are going to use the I-10 bridge, the future I-10 bridge that will be here, arrive sometime in the early 2030s, are going to be impacted by the decision she's made. And is she 100% there? No. And that's the problem. That's my opinion. I mean, this stuff matters. I think we sometimes exaggerate, you know, how much of a role government plays in our lives and the importance of an office. And your life will probably go on generally the same throughout. It's not going to, you're going to have to pay more, though. It's going to impact your life in maybe subtle ways. So that's what I'm just saying. I believe that's why this matters. And if this is indeed the best path forward, I don't want to hear it from Senator Elliott. I don't want it in a press release. I don't want it. And, you know, I want to hear from the governor. And I want her to stand for questions. You know, what's going on with the prisons? Dude, there's a bunch of things she needs to answer for. She doesn't have to. She is given a pass. It's not even about the election. She could win an election and be doing generally a good job, but just at a morally responsible sense, why are you doing this? But I don't have to talk to you people. I don't have to tell you things. That's my takeaway. This is going to forever cement her in Alabama history as being that person. She may think that she could build a prison and a highway and that's what she'll be remembered for. No. Here's what KI will be remembered for. The MIA governor. And we'll ask in 20 years, why did we put up with that? But we'll see. Let's see. Paul, one of the biggest big subs, bought a brand new fishing yacht on the prison. I heard about this fishing yacht, actually. One of the subcontractors. I don't know if there's any veracity to that claim. I'm not independently verified. But you're not the first person to tell me this. Somebody's getting rich off of this prison the way they did it. It's just a way to get money out the back door, I guess. Make sure everyone's taken care of. And then the new governor comes in and you don't have to leave it up to chance. It's disappointing, but... And the gas tax. Mike writes, the gas tax is another example of how our state sort of probably, like Scott said, our state has been on the Robin Hood plan for decades, especially after the gas tax. Yankees up north take the majority of the coast tax dollars and spend it elsewhere. They double down and are going to tell our projects to take from the rich folks at the beach. Well, you know, the city, the Birmingham metropolitan area pays their fair share. Huntsville, all of these places in Alabama have commuter traffic. Now, the Black Belt, not so much. This is Sam Gavan, state senator from Huntsville, whose, I guess, roots or origins are in kind of Dallas County. He says, well, like, if you choose to live there, you got to drive like an hour to go anywhere. One would assume that means using more gas. So I'm not going to, like, pit one part of the state against another. Although I'm surprised we haven't done that yet. They did that in 2019. That was literally a talking point that those people down there wanted their free bridge to the beach. Had actually someone in the governor's office tell me this. They were playing on ignorance. Jeff Poor, Huntsville radio host, surely he doesn't know anything about the Mobile area. And I got to talk, I got a list of talking points to use. Like I was a friendly. It's like, wait, this is not true. This is not the reality. Like people in Mobile, they're not just going to the beach all the time. Why are you telling people that? Why would you do that? And then I shortly thereafter got blacklisted. But that's the way they were operating, and they did this. And they're assuming that the majority of people in Alabama will never come to Mobile. And if they're going to the beach, they get off at the Maybenet exit and go south there at the beach, take the Beach Express or whatever. They don't cross the Dolly Parton Bridge. They don't go into Mobile. They're going to Mobile. They're going to Mobile. So there's never, it's always just a rare circumstance that they would have to cross the Mobile Bay into Baldwin County. And it's not as if everybody in Alabama, when they go to the beach, they go to Gulf Shores or Orange Beach. They go to the Florida coast. They go down that way. But they just kind of play on this geographic ignorance. As I said yesterday, the state benefits from having a coastline. Big business gets its port of Mobile. They get to move goods, products, in and out, commodities, in and out of the port of Mobile. Barge traffic, whatever it is, coming down the Mobile River, coming down the Alabama River. They get to use it. Hip, hip, hooray. Everybody's going to benefit. But they created this perception about that, that there were these big tanker ships that were going to come up the Mobile River. Like, come on, guys. These are little barges. So, anyway... You have all these things that are going for the coast to benefit the state, tax revenue, oil leases, things like that. Well, if you like having a coast, you don't want to be landlocked. And, you know, there's a net benefit there. You have a responsibility to ensure that your infrastructure for the people who live along the coast is up to par. Otherwise, just cede it to another state. A few more texts here. Scroll over it. Ivy no longer has her dog. I remember during coronavirus press conferences, she advised against getting together with friends for a good game of bridge, implying that was a hobby of hers. I've always wanted to see that. Imagining a dog's playing poker kind of image. It was also this, like telling people to stay away from church. Can't do that. Not in Alabama. Maybe in England. I think most of the churches and congregations would act in good faith and not, you know, would not have had Sunday services all in one gathering place. But to do it by to mandate that, you know, by government declaration, you can't do that. Was dangerous territory for a Republican, any governor, but especially an Alabama Republican governor. And that's where we were. Old guy, will Tommy Tubber, Governor Tubber, will have to answer for what she calls yes. She's leaving him a mess. She is going to leave him a mess, and she doesn't have to answer for it. It's the damnedest thing. They're going to hold Tubberville to a higher standard than Kay Ivey. Our friends at the media, AL.com, Laniap, etc., TV stations. He's going to be held to a higher standard. We might as well just get used to it. Jason. If you bring up Granny Governor in a public sitting, overwhelmingly folks will say how pleased they are with her, but they can't ever say why. I joined us at church recently, and all I heard was how great she is. There's definitely been a great cover job by her team somehow. It's going to be one of the most remarkable public relations, probably in the history of Alabama, but public relations feats we'll have ever known in history. Like I said, Mark Sanford goes off with his mistress for a rendezvous for a few days. No one can find him. It gets out in the media, and there's breaking news reports. And then he comes back with like this weird Appalachian Trail excuse, which was totally false. Well, I don't know if it's false or not, but anyway. And he has to resign in disgrace. It's just embarrassing. And that was just for like a few days. In Alabama, you could go years without seeing the governor, apparently. They said she hasn't done an interview. She usually does guaranteed one a year with Todd Stacey on Capital Journal, public television. They didn't even get that. She didn't even go in that friendly arena. They sent Liz Fillmore, her chief. There were like three places she would go. It was like Rashad Hudson, who's now in D.C. I think he works for Gray Television or one of the big TV, Next Star or something. There was Matt Naughty on 99.5, Matt Murphy, Andrea Lindenberg. And they would just do their show at her office. She trusted them so much. There was Todd Stacey and before him, Don Daly, the obligatory public television, public affairs program interview. And that would be it. But you'd get to see it 3-4 times a year. I've been in this game for a while. I've only had a one-on-one interview with Governor Ivey one time. It wasn't even that long. It was for like 3 minutes. And it was right there where they do the Kill a Mockingbird play in Monroe County at the courthouse, the old courthouse. And then ever since then, it's just sort of been blacklisted. But that's not just me. It's every other media outlet. I think she appeared on Uncle Henry's show during the hurricane. Out of shame. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Excuse me, man, but where's the door? From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jasmine and magnolia. Sleepy sweet home, Alabama, roll tide, roll. Muddy water, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. My name texter, you know she is not calling the shots, but who is? I don't think it's one person. Sort of the way the state government's constituted, you have very, very powerful agency heads. And you had to obviously be in that inner circle, but that was the problem if you ask Admiral Davis. Like, he wasn't in the circle. And he got in a turf war with the Department of Mental Health. And he lost. But you put these agency heads, and they have all the decision-making capability, authority. And that's sort of the way it goes. The details, maybe Ivy's aware of them. I don't know. But it's there's a lot of public-private partnership kind of dealings there as well. Those kinds of things. And that's why I think they sit in the back room and they get together and they just sort of come to whatever the conclusion ought to be. So it's not like you have one all-powerful chief of staff or one all-powerful advisor. You have some very powerful agency and department heads throughout the state government. That's going to change with the Tuberville administration. The consolidation of the executive power will come back together, and you'll have somebody making decisions. Maybe it's not always going to be Tuberville, but it'll go through that office. But there's like some very big decisions that are being made, public service commission and things like that. Now, I think this is also why this works. The governor is very deferential to the legislature. Sure. And I don't mean, well, it's very deferential to the legislative branch, meaning the leadership in the Alabama House of Representatives gets a lot of say about policy. And I think that's why it sort of works the way it works. The legislature just about gets whatever it wants. And in return, the governor gets what she wants, and then everybody's happy. But the governor doesn't want a whole lot from the legislature. Maybe three things a year, three priorities. It's you know, her legislative agenda's always been very underwhelming, I thought. There's just no, you never see KIV in the state house. Not that you should. But sometimes the obligatory visit, I mean, you know, the president goes to Capitol Hill. Governors used to go to the state house, but she stays out of their way. They stay out of her way, and it kind of works. If you ever go to Charleston, West Virginia, the Capitol, every road, hospital, street's named after Robert KKK Byrd. Maybe that's what Ivy's going for. But he brought home a lot of bacon. Fire Dog continues, we just have the governor, the state house, and the state senate go away for 4 years. Seems like the state is running just fine without a governor. Think how much we could save in salary. Well, the problems, we look at the state's problems. And a lot of you who are impacted by state government in different ways, be it public education. That's the biggest gripe. And I don't think that we're any more or less satisfied with the way things are. Maybe things have gotten better tangibly, but what's consumer sentiment out there? Is the public like, wow, they have really done such an awesome job here? Or do they tell us they do? But is that the way people are taking it? And then the other parts of it are more, you know, keep in mind the state spends us three times as much on education as everything else put together. But you keep going, go through this a little deeper. The roads in the state are underwhelming. They're always repaving. There's always tie-ups in different places. Interstate 59 has been detoured, two-laned, whatever, for years. Public safety is, you know, a big question mark. Prisons are a disaster. What do you ask from your state? What has gotten better in 10 years under KIV? Serious question. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Curtis Slow was the finest pickup to ever play the blues. I saw the light. I saw the light. No more darkness.
sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Welcome back to the Jump Horse Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Still to come, Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs. Try to get a read on what's going on in South Carolina in sort of the wake of the untimely passing of U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham. But there's going to be elections and candidates and a whole new saga there to be dealt with. That's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Joining us now, regular on this program, one of the favorites of the show, my friend, former state senator Dick Brubaker. Senator, how are you?
Man, I am doing great. How are you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, doing well. It's the summer lull, but we have a lot of commentary out there that's keeping things the machinery moving.
Well, yeah, soon to be Governor Tuberville is apparently stirring the pot, and he's not even in office yet.
No, and I, you know, kind of wonders, you wonder, like, this is very emblematic of what I think is going to happen in 2027, but you have sort of like radio silence from an administration for the last 5 years, I would say, ever since COVID ended. And, yeah, somebody who's, for all intents and purposes of this discussion, is governor-elect, and he's already out there rocking the boat, saying things. Good. He's talking about prison time or jail time for some of the actors in the Department of Corrections. He's talking about data centers. He's saying things that no one in the current administration seems to really be willing to get out in front of. So, you know, I wonder, like, that's sort of like what we are to expect when this actually happens, when they take the oath of office and you're going to have a 0-60 phenomenon. You know, how is the state going to react to that? How, more importantly, I guess, how's the bureaucracy in Montgomery, Alabama going to react to it?
You know, I don't know how they'll react, but I'll tell you one thing. I think people respond to leadership. And what we have lacked, if you want to know why this has been, this past legislature has been the worst. If you're a regular working Alabamian, the reason your state government has just screwed you to the wall repeatedly in this last legislative session to give favorable treatment to the biggest, richest companies in Alabama, it's because we don't have a governor. I mean, the BCA is just running the executive branch, and they have run it for their own benefit. So if you wonder why, if you're a property owner, you can no longer get any protection from ADEM. If you are a customer of the power company, you no longer have any vote on the, at least meaningful vote on the Public Service Commission, or why your taxes are going up, or why Veterans Affairs used to be run by veterans and now it's going to be run by a governor's appointee. It's because the people in charge are representing the big mule. I mean, then the legislature, because it's had no leadership from the governor's office, has just gone along with all that. And I'm glad Governor Tuberville, I mean, like some of the stuff he said, I don't agree with, like on the data centers. But thank goodness he's out there in front of reporters and in front of the media taking some stands. Good for him.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, like my theory is two things here. The legislature is deferential to the governor because she's deferential to them. That, you know, this isn't normal that, like, you usually have a governor with a big, long list of a legislative agenda. She doesn't really have that. She wants two or three things a session, and she generally gets what she wants. But the other part is, like, I don't think there's, like, one person who is really running the show there, and it's certainly not Kay Ivey. I think it's all these department heads she's delegated this authority to that she's given the power to, but she's not really in the loop on a lot of what they do. I mean, it's
big picture stuff. Well, you're talking about this toll bridge, a $7 toll. Are you kidding me? And nobody in state government seems to know who approved it or how that's going to happen. But I won't disagree with you to this extent. Some of the stuff that Kay Ivey has allowed to happen, whether she is in charge of it or not, like this West Alabama Parkway, I'm telling you, it is just wrong to take tax revenue from people in Mobile and just hand it to people in West Alabama who didn't pony up the money. I mean, the money that's going to pay for these roads comes mainly from the interstate corridor. And all those communities from Mobile all the way to Huntsville that paid in all the money are going to get zero benefit from it because the Unilateral has decided to hand it to a few communities in West Alabama.
Right.
The idea that if you build a road, you're going to have economic development, that's just nuts. I mean, nobody thinks that's how wealth moves. If you want to have wealth, you've got to have a population center and somebody for people to hire. Even the catfish farms have gone broke in West Alabama because they can't hire anybody.
Well, so it's this too, though, and you mentioned that, and this is very important about that West Alabama corridor. She's not only just taking money from the interstate corridors where the gas tax revenue is generated. She's done it for the next 20 years. The next potentially three gubernatorial administrations, she has maxed out the credit card that long. There's no borrowing capacity against any of this gas tax money for future projects, all because to get this done.
And you know, let's quit being nice about the Port of Mobile. I'm not running for office anymore. And the truth is that because the state, going all the way back to the Exxon spill, when all that money was supposed to come in and we were finally going to make the Port of Mobile competitive, remember that?
Of course.
The state has broken every single promise it's made to develop that port. Savannah is eating our lunch. But that's because in Georgia, they're actually investing in that port. And even though it's, you know, and that's how economic development is supposed to work. We've already got an economic engine at the Port of Mobile. We're just not developing it. And what are we going to do with the money? The legislature just passed a $600 million bond issue for West Alabama Parkway. I mean, call me crazy. I think it would be better to let's keep all the promises we made to the Port Authority and do and have the economic engine in Mobile that Georgia has in Savannah.
Yeah, well, I mean,
what are we doing here?
The other thing about the port, well, and this is a Mobile audience, like who is asking for that? You know,
asking for what?
The port expansion. If you surveyed, if you polled people, what would you rather have? A way to cross the Mobile Bay. Yeah, a new bridge or expand a port. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be overwhelmingly new bridge. But this is sort of
like... Well, I got news for you. I would be okay with spending the gas tax money had she borrowed the money to build the new Bay Bridge. I think that was a lot better than just dumping it in West Alabama over the next 10 years. Because one thing about it, the community in the port city is growing and, you know, between USA and Airbus and all the economic, all the economic engines that are down in that area. Anything you do that invests in infrastructure will pay off over the long run. Anything. Because the economic engines are all already there.
Well, here's another dirty little secret about the West Alabama corridor. The way she had to do it, because it was a project that didn't have widespread support. Not even, you know, the legislature, you're right, could have stopped it, but they didn't. It didn't have a lot of, like, cheerleading, but it's something she wanted. And she knew that if she didn't get as much done as she possibly could, or whoever's calling the shots on this, that they were going to pull the rug out from under. And Tuberville would have stopped the bulldozers and the clearing, and they would have, but they've gotten so far down the path on this. At a cost.
Now, you know, I'm wondering if that's true.
Well, I've driven over there, and they have made very tangible progress in a short amount of time. I've never seen a road project go quite as well as that's going. But it's because they dumped so much money into it, and it's made that project.
Well, and the thing is that money, who is that money benefiting? If you look at the road company, the road builders, they're actually receiving that money. I got news for you. I mean, we got places all over Alabama. When they passed the gas tax, the promise they made was that the communities that paid in the tax would benefit from the money. And that is not happening. And, you know, we have the leadership, whether it's on the PSC or on ADEM or on Veterans Affairs, or even on at the Department of Corrections. I mean, Kay Ivey has met with her staff anyway, has met with person after person suggesting to her that now that we've repealed judicial override, it's probably not a good idea to execute the people where the jury, you know, the jury verdict was for life without parole. And the judge, you know, said, no, we're going to execute them. Well, now that's illegal. The legislature has repealed that law. So if those people were sentenced now, there's no question they'd have life without. Probably not a good idea to execute those 25 people.
Yeah, because then you...
Nobody can get anywhere.
You open
Nobody
yourself up.
Nobody can get a serious meeting.
You open yourself up to a lot of, litigation potentially, right? Like...
Well, it's just wrong. I mean, do we believe in the reason the legislature repealed judicial override is because of the constitutional guarantee of trial by jury. If you believe in limited government, I mean, the jury trial by jury is a pretty big deal, I think.
Well, and you're right. And if they give life without parole, then so be it. But that I don't know what the reasoning was for that. We're always
the
tied up in this.
For what? For what?
For overriding the jury.
I do.
Well, what?
I was in the legislature. I'll tell you what it was. The number of overrides doubled in the year the 12 months preceding every election. You can go back and see it over and over again. And one reason when the legislature took up the repeal, all the judges wanted us to repeal it. And the reason is, if you're an elected judge, there's always some ambitious DA that wants to run against you. And so they're pressuring these people, you got to be tough on crime. So the jury hears all the evidence, said life without parole. And the judges felt all this pressure to execute them. And that's why the number of overrides would double. I mean,
because
it's
the way
not
we
just
elect
one
judges.
Yeah. And because we elect judges. And no, I'm totally for the death penalty, but I don't think there's anybody, no matter how much you like the death penalty, that thinks your chances of being executed should be dependent on the election cycle. No. And that's why the legislature voted to repeal it. I think it was 34-1. It was a terrible law.
Well, that's where we are today. And we're always in this continuous, fight with in court over what we're doing and the way we handle the death penalty. Corrections is a disaster. And my theory on this
that's another one of KIV's projects. Our new $1 billion prison.
Yeah. No bid contracts.
Yeah. No bid contracts, $1 billion. And how many additional beds do we have now that we've spent that $1 billion?
We don't have anything right now.
None.
Maybe we'll get it soon.
We spent $1 billion and we got nothing to show for it.
Well, they said, look, we got to do it this way. We don't have a choice.
They do have a choice.
Well, this is what they told us at the time, that we got to move fast.
But nobody believed them. You didn't believe them.
I believed them. I thought that the federal government could put the state of Alabama in some kind of receivership, especially when you had a U.S. attorney. Our former U.S. attorney at the time saying as much, and you had those three U.S. attorneys, and they sued the state, and he thought, well, we don't want this. We got to move fast. But
let me tell you what you could have done. All you would have had to do is build the prison instead of tearing down and getting rid of existing beds. You could have refurbished the old prison and built the new one, and you could have doubled the amount of prison beds in that county. But no, we're not going to do that. We're going to destroy existing beds and just replace them. That's not what the court said we had to do. And Governor Ivey presided over the most expensive state prison built this decade by anybody.
Look, they told us it was going to be $600 million, and ends up being $1.3 billion. That's a problem, okay?
Yeah, buddy, when you don't bid the contract, that things get more expensive.
Yeah, when you do construction management. But the justification was, well, these guys can move faster. And Senator, at the time, Cadell Construction, I was told by a lot of the governor's, sort of surrogates that, Well, there's only like two or three companies in the country that can build these prisons. And so happens we have one in Montgomery. And I don't know, like, you know, but I think there was some wish casting there about the cost. And we could have used, they used COVID money, COVID relief money. Because what's it, like other states gave tax breaks and things like that. And we just dumped it all into prisons. And then it come to find out that they lowballed the entire system.
Well, not only, look, I don't blame this on Cadell. I blame this on the government. I mean, they were using, I mean, the problem is when you don't have active day-to-day hands-on management in the governor's office, the taxpayers end up getting screwed. And that's what happened here. I mean, you know, we've got $1 billion invested in a prison project and no additional beds. So the overcrowding that this new prison was supposed to address, it didn't address it. Because we don't have additional beds. So we're $1 billion in with absolutely no benefit, except prisoners will have nicer beds.
I just think they wanted technology. They can't hire prison guards. No one wants to work at these medieval prisons. They had to.
It's not medieval. It's supposed to be the most state-of-the-art prison in the country.
I meant the ones existing now. They couldn't. They were like, well, the way the buildings are designed, you can't put cameras and all this stuff they were going to have. And, you know, you gave them the benefit of the doubt, but it just turns out that they.
No, we didn't give them the benefit of the doubt. This wasn't voted on. This was a decision made by the executive branch of government to enrich certain people. And the idea that there are only three companies in America that can build a prison is just BS, and you know it.
Well, I mean, but at the time, it was, we got to hurry. And it wasn't so much that we have three companies in America that can build a prison. It was three companies that could build it in X amount of time, which turned out to be just a total fairy tale.
You've got one company in Alabama that's got the fix in. And we allow them to lowball. I mean, they got a project by bidding at 60% of the true cost.
Right.
I'm telling you, I'm sorry, Jeff. That's just wrong.
Well, I'm not making
excuses.
And the
governor should have been on their ass every day. And instead, we just reward them. We just roll over and fork over another $400 million in taxpayer money to a private company that, because of their relationship with state government, was able to get a no-bid contract for the biggest project, the biggest state-funded project in a long time. I mean, for a non-road project, $1 billion is a lot.
Senator, we got to leave it there. We're way long. But, hey, thanks for hopping on.
Hey, man, I loved it. Thanks for letting me do it.
No problem. Thanks. Former State Senator Dick Brubaker there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Know when to walk away and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret
is it's midnight in Montgomery. Just hear that whippoorwill, see the stars light up the purple sky.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. A ton of texts to get to. Usually that's the what happens after Senator Brubaker makes an appearance on the program. So we'll get to those over the next couple of segments. Will Hampson joining us in the 11 o'clock hour. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Can't we get a candidate that doesn't take AIPAC money, referring to Barry? Well, I just, the AIPAC thing is like such a, I think it's a nothing burger. I really do. I think that U.S. policy toward Israel, and I'm not giving a pass to Israeli government by saying this. That's not the point of this, but it just becomes like one of these talking points that is in the big scheme. There are a lot more financial contributions going on that I think are way more nefarious than AIPAC. And I mean, I get it. But AIPAC is, it's an American organization. These people have their, they have their right of association. They're free to associate. And they're free to give money and raise money and give money to political campaigns. 251-343-0106 is up on that text line. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant.